you and I both grew up on a lot of movies that were set in New York.
Yes.
And my theory is, and it's a pretty sound theory, that everyone in New York is a criminal. But just like different levels of criminal, like there's no innocence in New York. Everyone's a criminal. The babies are criminals. The old people are criminals. The criminals are like super criminals. And there's still like the police aren't going to arrest you for like small criminality, or they might. Yeah. Depends how rich you are.
Yeah, that's right.
And how bored they are. But everyone's a criminal. Like there's just different tiers of criminals.
Yeah. Okay. So it's like white collar crime in Manhattan.
Yeah.
It's like people in suits ripping off the government. And
I mean, like fucking Wall Street is in New York. Like the biggest criminals in the world.
Rorts happening. Yeah. We love a good rort in Australia.
Yeah.
The New Yorkers, obviously.
A scam, a rort, and there's beheadings if you watch Highlander. Like, here's the thing about Highlander, right? So, Connor McLeod, the Highlander, still goes around chopping people's heads off. He doesn't usually initiate the fights, but he's still, like, the good guy.
Mm-hmm.
But he's still a fucking criminal because he goes around decapitating people with a sword. It's like, okay, I go for this guy. He's the protagonist of this movie, sure, but he still chops people's heads off.
Imagine, like, the homicide detectives that have to sort of follow this guy around and, like, try and solve all these murders. Like, people's heads getting cut off around. Is it actually in New York?
It is New York.
So, yeah, there you go, yeah.
It actually starts with them saying, someone was decapitated in New Jersey last week. And the cops go, yeah, but that's Jersey.
Meh.
basically, that's exactly what they say. I go, well, I just figured that was Jersey.
I had this sense that I've picked up, I've gleaned, pieced together from reading the backs of pieces of rubbish I found on the ground that New York was a much worse, you know, even more crime-infested hellhole than it is today in the 1980s and maybe the early 90s as well.
I think it was, like, it did kind of clean itself up, but it was definitely, it was like the Earth version of Mos Eisley's. Like, you'll never find a more wretched hive of scum and villainy sort of a place.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, it's like, you know how there's this sort of common myth we tell about ourselves in Australia, that of our convict past and everything, which is really not entirely true, because a lot of people just came out here because they wanted to be colonizers and get land and
fun in the sun.
Yeah, right. But I feel like New York is actually all convicts.
They are all criminals.
They're all descended from criminals.
See, the 80s version of New York, and, you know, after they cleaned it up and did the whole, like, zero tolerance, you know, towards crime and drugs and shit like that.
Mm-hmm. Which works really great, by the way.
Yeah.
10
out of 10. Yeah. But it was basically like, New York was always seen as like a post-apocalyptic wasteland. They just never had an apocalypse.
Yeah.
It was just always like that.
This imagery of New York in the 80s that you saw in movies was like, just graffiti everywhere. People with mohawks pulling flick knives out on just random passers-by. You know, like, a guy with a boombox. There's always a guy with a boombox somewhere.
There's always muggings going on in, like, every single alley.
Yeah. It was really... And weirdly, I have weird nostalgia for that, like, imagery of, like, a grimy 80s
The steam city. Coming out of the ground.
Rubbish sort of... some, like, guys with leather jackets on and, like, tight jeans and, like sort of, like... You know,
there's always a gang war.
Yeah, that's right.
There's always a gang war. Even if you're not in a gang, you're in a gang war.
People are always throwing down and, doing breakdance fights and...
breakdance fights. There's turtles in the sewers and there's sometimes ninjas. I mean, come on.
Plenty of ninjas. Ninjas galore.
Yeah, there's a lot of ninjas in New York in the 80s. Not just turtles. Just like, we were playing a game tonight.
Of the Black Manta.
The Black Manta, that's right.
Yeah.
And that was set in, like, post-apocalyptic New York, and it wasn't even... There was no apocalypse in that either.
No.
It was just a shithole.
just going around and beating up people with, like white guys with afros, kind of... And just, like, grabbing them from behind and choking them and being like, where are you taking the kids that are being kidnapped? And they're like, I don't know, guy, or whatever. I don't know what New Yorkers sound like. Get off my back, bro.
I'm just going out to get the groceries. What the fuck are you doing?
Yeah, there you go. Hey,
probably
hey,
more Jersey than anything else.
What you doing here? Hey, something like that.
Hey, pushing another. Hey, what are you doing? Hey.
Throwing ninja starts at people's faces. Everyone's pulling guns on you. There's not a single person in that game that you come across
all criminals
trying to shoot you. They're all trying to shoot you.
They're just average New York citizens.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, even like Snake from Escape from New York.
Yeah.
He just wanted to find an apartment.
That's right.
That's all he wanted to do.
The irony of that movie is that's just not even.
That was like just filmed in New York. No. They just set up a camera.
All dystopias are inspired by
Kurt Russell was just like, I just want to, you know.
Just a documentary about a guy who wants to find an apartment in Manhattan.
He killed 70 people. Yes, but he got an apartment.
That's right. It's the size of a closet, but he got it. It has no internet, but it's great.
It was the 80s.
And so. It costs $1,000 a week. Yes.
Oh, which is similar to Canberra at the moment.
Yeah.
We're having our own rental crisis here.
Mm-hmm. It's rough out there, guys. Yeah. It's rough out in the main streets of Canberra.
I think the lesson that we've all learned from this is kill a boomer. Just if you find a boomer on the street, kill him, take his property. Like, there can be only one.
This is where we're headed. There's a spate of beheadings around Canberra. Like, people aged about 50 to 65, 70 years old. It's like, what is happening? Who is doing this? You're just like wiping the blood off your katana.
I have a katana. I do wipe blood off it frequently. Usually my own blood.
All I'm going to say is if there was a spate of boomer beheadings in this town, I would suspect you. I'm not going to say I would turn you in. But I would.
We need, like, Canberra, and then the motto underneath in Latin is there can be only one. You know Latin. What's there can be only one in Latin?
Oh, God. They put me on the spot like that. I'll get back to you in a week. Yeah, I can translate Latin, but I can't speak it or like do it quickly. It's more a question of like, give me a sentence and give me like 10 minutes and I'll come back to you with what that sentence means.
I could do that with Google.
Yeah, Google's a lot quicker than me, to be honest. Yeah, I'm not good at Latin. I'm interested in it, but I have not dedicated the time or energy to actually become like very good with it.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I mean, everyone goes, oh my god, your last name is Yoshimura and you spent 7 years in Japan. That must mean you can speak Japanese, right? And I'm like, oh, right, oh. Pulling at my collar and going, yeah sure right. I can.
Konnichiwa, motherfucker.
I was like, sayonara, and then just chop their head off with a katana and everything's solved.
You just solve all your problems by cutting people's heads off. You know, that's not always the answer, AC.
It answers a lot of my problems, though. The problems in life can be solved with beheading, yeah. Decapitation.
Well, that's what ISIS seem to think, and they're doing strong, aren't they? Last I checked, I don't know, it's been a while. But they're pretty good. Successful organization.
Oh, yeah.
Seem to have a lot of interest around the world, a lot of recruits. Anyway, so, I haven't checked in on that war. I wonder how it's going. Oh, jeez. Oh, no.
Checking on a war. Oh, that's right. We're fighting those people.
Oh, that's right.
It's the war against terrorism and also the war against dodgy plumbers.
Yeah.
And whoever else we're having a war with.
One of the great privileges of being in Australia is that we can just not pay attention to world tragedies and horrible events around us and just kind of pretend that everything's great. And that's how I like to get through my day, is just by blocking everything out. Don't read the news. Just put my fingers in my ears and go, la, 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 la.
Well, I mean, we are very far away from everyone else, except New Zealand. Mm-hmm. And frankly, we're not far enough away from them. Mm. But the interesting thing about Australia is that, like, we're a big country, small population, we're a liberal democracy. But Australia likes to talk itself up by saying, we have the X biggest thing in the Southern Hemisphere. And it's like, what else is in the Southern fucking Hemisphere? Yeah. Like, most of the stuff's in the Northern Hemisphere.
Yeah.
The Southern Hemisphere's got, like...
It's Argentina and,
Brazil, Argentina, South Africa.
Yeah.
And a whole bunch of fucking penguins.
Yeah, our biggest competition's probably, South American countries. And the African countries. But, yeah, apart from that, it's, like... Suck at Vanuatu, you know? Suck my dick. Fucking New Zealand.
The biggest in the Southern Hemisphere is not something you should keep boasting. Yeah. But Australia does it all the time to talk itself up.
It's great. Yeah, we do that a lot. We have a lot of big things in Australia.
We have big bananas, big pineapples.
I saw the big... when I went to Griffith with my lovely wife, I saw the big tennis racket, AC.
Oh, God.
Let me tell you,
I didn't even know that existed.
Neither did I. Till we drove past it. Well, I think my wife went a little bit out of her way to show it to me the first time we went. She's just like, you got to see this.
Okay. How big is it? Is it just an oversized novelty racket?
It's just like a meter or something. Oh. No. It's like the size of a building. You know, okay. It's like a
respectable big
like
thing.
A petrol station. You know, like it's like not huge. It's not like you're not just standing in awe of it. Like you don't get the willies when you look gaze up at it, like the sheer size of it or anything like that. But it's big.
I just like to think that, like, after our society is inevitably destroyed, yeah. New York style,
mm-hmm.
Like, archaeologists will just come to Australia, like, hundreds of years later, thousands of years later, and just find these big things. It's like, Australia was populated by giants.
A race of giants.
Right. They have big bananas, big pineapple, big tennis rackets, big big lobsters.
The big merino.
The big merino, which is just a giant fucking concrete sheep.
There's a restaurant in it.
Yeah, there is, yeah.
A gift shop. Yeah, I don't know why this started to happen in Australia.
The like, tourist traps are very odd in this country.
Yes.
If you could create any big thing, what would it be?
Oh, God. Why did my brain go to the big penis? Because I have got confidence problem.
The big cock and balls.
I'd make a big penis because that's what I have, guys.
Can you imagine it's like Australia's compensating for something?
Well, that's probably the inspiration behind a lot of these big bananas and things like that. When you think about
probably.
It. Yeah, I don't know. What would I make? I got nothing. The big... God damn it. I don't know. I just look around things in the room. The big water bottle. I don't know. The big shelving unit.
I'm looking at my budgie Coke. I'm just budgie. Thinking about the big budgie.
That would actually work. Yeah. That's actually a good one.
Actually, you know what? You know what it would be? It would be the big budgie smugglers, which is just like not even a giant man, just like his torso.
Yeah,
and just a giant pair of red Speedos.
That's basically just like, the big penis.
Yeah, it's basically it's the a same classy thing. Version. Except. We call them budgie smugglers in this country. And it's basically just a giant pair of swimmers.
Oh, man.
Like undies, red undies.
The Speedo.
With just a giant bulge at the front.
The Speedo. Did we invent the Speedo? I want to say it's an Australian...
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, well, it's certainly part of our national culture. Although, I don't know about UAC, but I am not a bold and brave enough man to wear a Speedo. I used to wear them when I was a kid.
Yeah, I mean, we all did. Like, yeah. We all used to wear stubbies as a kid as well. Stubbies are like really short shorts.
Yes. Yes, basically all the men in Australia in the 80s were wearing hot pants.
Yeah.
And we were like, oh, no, what's the problem with this? Nah, mate, it's good.
They're little tiny pockets at the back.
Yeah, that's right.
On your mum cheeks.
Good old stubbies.
Oh, let's see. Speedo.
Who invented the Speedo?
Origin.
Yeah. The banana song. Oh, hang on.
Speedo began life in the land of sun, sea and surf, Australia, in 1928, Sydney-based McRae Knitting Mills launched Speedo as the brand name for its swimming costumes. Okay, so it is Australian. I didn't know that.
That's really funny. That 1928, women would have been wearing like a full like neck-to-ankle swimsuit. And then there's the man next to them wearing just basically a pair of undies.
Very tight undies as well.
Just be like, what's the problem with this? And make sure no one sees your ankles, love. Make sure no one sees your throat. It won't get people getting randy around here. Cover up those collarbones.
I do love a smacking pair of throats.
Yeah, that's man, look at that lack of Adam's apple on that lady. Holy moly.
Look at her ankles cracking.
Oh my God. A trapezoid? Is that a thing?
Anyway, pretty sure trapezoid is like something in a gym.
It's like an alien race that's come to destroy us in 100 years from now.
Oh.
When we develop the...
just giant Speedos.
The nuclear fusion drive or something. They'll come and wipe us out. The trapezoids are coming.
Good. We deserve it.
Yeah.
They're going to listen to this podcast and go, yeah, these fuckers, wipe them off the face of that cock and ball country, Australia.
There's literally a group of aliens that are like, okay, we're going to wipe out Earth. We'll give them one more chance. We'll listen to this podcast called Game Life Balance Australia and see if they can somehow redeem the human race. Then we'll let them live.
And on that note, you are listening to Game Life Balance Australia, episode 110. This is a stream of nonsense because every five episodes, which are very few and far between now.
Yes, that's right. It's like once every couple of years. It's like a rare celestial event at this point. Like, gather around, kids. It's a stream of nonsense. Quick, you might not see one of these again in your lifetime.
Let's all gather around the wireless. and listen to the dulcet tones of A, She, and Rob.
Just imagining one of those,
like... Oh, they're talking about cock and balls again. I didn't see that coming.
Come on, little Timmy. You know those, like, images of, like, of, you know, idyllic nuclear families where the father's got a pipe and...
Yeah.
They're all sitting there, like, there's rosy-faced, rosy-cheeked children... Just all gathered around the wireless to listen to us talk about giant penises. Yeah.
No, that's exactly like... the aliens might spare us. Mm-hmm. They might just think we're not worth wiping out after listening to this episode.
No. Yeah.
So
intelligent life, we thought they had it. Turns out, not so much.
Yeah, well, they seem plant-based almost.
Yeah. Yeah.
How about check in on those intelligent monkeys? How's that going?
They invented
something called Speedos.
Yeah.
What's that? It's a piece of cloth that covers their genitals, but only just, and sometimes not even that.
Yeah.
Okay, let's just... You know what? We should get the fuck out of here.
They don't even want to invade.
It's just like, okay, you know what we should do? We should leave.
Just wait 1,000 years till we kill ourselves and like, come back and problem solved, right?
Yeah. You know? I don't know what you'd want with Earth. We've already, like... pillaged most of our own resources.
Yeah, like the base. We're very quickly turning the Earth into what it was in the start of the movie Wall-E. If you've seen that movie, it's basically where we're headed at a really alarming pace. You know, like it's not going to be that long before Wall-E is not just some sort of satire about the future of humanity, but just actually a reality TV show.
That's just life now, yeah. What pissed me off about Wall-E is that Wall-E looks a hell of a lot like Johnny Five.
You know, you're right. Now that you mention it, yes.
From Short Circuit.
It's basically Johnny... They were like, what if we did Johnny Five, but...
But he was small and cute, basically.
Yeah, yeah, and had a girlfriend. Does he have a girlfriend? Does Johnny Five fall in love at any point?
No, he flirts a bit with Stefan Speck, who is Ally Sheedy.
Of course he does.
He dances with her. Because okay, so what you don't know, what's interesting about Short Circuit,
mm-hmm.
that was a hit, and they had a sequel, of course, and they also had Steve Guttenberg, for better or worse, is that it was directed by the same guy who did Saturday Night Fever.
Okay.
Which launched...
John Travolta's career. That was a very high, critically acclaimed movie.
It was. It's a super interesting movie. Yeah. It's not just about him dancing.
No.
It's about racial like stereotypes and...
Yeah, it's kind of a deep and dark movie.
It is kind of dark.
But all we remember is the scene where he was dancing and like that's what people take away from that movie
today.
It's
a 70s movie.
Yeah.
And then he directed War Games with... killer Matthew Broderick.
Right, yeah, these are like kind of intense movies. Yeah.
Yeah, War Games, like, it had an innocence to it, but it was basically about nuclear destruction.
Right, yeah.
And AI. Way before AI was like an actual threat.
Yeah, that's right.
Like it is these days.
ChatGPT's coming to fucking kill us.
It's like, we are going to get fucked over by AI, but not in like the Skynet way you think we are.
No.
It's just going to take all of our jobs.
That's right. God damn it. Someone better not realize that ChatGPT could do a better job writing letters to people for my government organization than I could.
This is a volunteer job that you and I are doing right now, and it's going to get taken over. Like, it can scan our voices, analyze our, like, speech patterns and jokes, and then just write Speedo jokes for an hour, and then people will go, hey, it's actually better now.
Yeah.
Got rid of that annoying human element.
Yeah, like the march of AI is really fascinating. I'm sort of like, I don't know, I'm sort of at times I feel excited about it. Other times I feel like a Luddite and I want to go and like, I don't know, hit a computer with a club or something like that. I kind of want to go out and just like throw paint on some sort of like software center or hardware center, you know, pull the plug out. And
I like it. It's like, I'm fascinated by it, but I want to hit it with a club, which is like the most Neanderthal, like, caveman shit you can do to a computer. It's like, me grog don't like talking machine. Bang, bang, bang.
Imagine if in 2001 A Space Odyssey, instead of like slowly removing the memory chips from the computer, you just wanted to hit it with a stick. Just a big stick, like a thick, you know, a nice like...
Just a crowbar or something. Like, smashy smashy.
You die now!
That is the Australian version of 2001 of Space Odyssey would be fucking hilarious.
Hitting the computer with a cricket bat.
Oi, you go shush now, mate. It's like, no, I'm getting better. It's like, he sounds English. Get him, you fucking pommy bastard.
Get out of here, you fucking Yanks.
Just keep hitting it with a cricket bat until it shots up.
Oh, God. That would be great. Okay, I really want to see that.
I kind of do want to see 2001, an Australian Odyssey. An Aussie Odyssey. An Aussie-ty, even.
Oh, man. It's all those, like, spaceships at the start of the movie that are, like, floating around gracefully to classical music would just be replaced by VB cans and, like...
The space station is just a giant VB can.
That's right, yeah.
It's like, yep, this is your Captain Booney.
Yeah.
Wear me thongs.
Oh my God. Amazing. Starring Mal Meninga.
I'd love him as my lawyer, that's for sure.
God damn it. I love Mal Meninga. I do. Like, I don't care. I don't care what dodgy law firm he represents on TV. I stand by that man.
No, Mal Meninga was possibly one of the greatest rugby league players, which is real rugby, I'll have you know.
Mm-hmm.
Not the one that those fucking poofs play.
They're poncing around. Rugby
union. fucking rich pricks.
Proper rugby league.
Proper rugby. You know, where you hurt each other.
Yeah.
No, it's rugby league is such a fucking thugs game, and I love it.
Yeah, it's great. I love it. I'm going to actually... I made a pledge this year that my wife was very happy about, where I said to her, I'm going to watch a lot more football this year and a lot more cricket. And she was like, you go for that. You do that.
You do it. You so leave me alone.
Yeah.
You leave me the fuck alone.
You want to watch television quietly by yourself? Great. Go do that.
You don't bother me for 90 minutes. She would love this.
I think that's half the reason she's on board. She's like, you know what, darling? If you want to do that so I can have some quiet time, great. So I'm going to be getting back into rugby league.
I do like
this year, I see.
The Canberra Raiders, who, they are our team.
Yes.
I actually went to the grand final a few years ago. I had a great time, but we lost.
Damn it.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, the Roosters were a better side. Mm-hmm. Like, they did play better. And I always thought that we were going to come back in the last few minutes like we did in our first grand final win in 89.
Mm-hmm.
But we just didn't make it. Like, we got so close a few times. But, you know, sometimes you just got to say it was a good game and the other team were the better team.
Yeah, it's a cruel mistress, rugby league. It'll break your heart. It'll break your heart.
It'll break your bones as well. It's a thugs game.
It's a rough game.
It is very, very rough. I used to love playing rugby league, but oh man, I got hurt real bad.
Yeah, I could never play. Like, I realized pretty early in my life, AC, that I was more of a lover than a fighter, let's say, you know, not really suited to, you know, in like the Warner Brothers cartoons, have you ever seen the Foghorn Leghorn cartoons where he has that, there's that little chicken with glasses that reads books?
Foghorn Leghorn's
always trying to get him.
I say,
he's like, come on, you need to do manly things, like, you know, pass the football around or something like that. Mm. And the kid's just like, no, I think I'm gonna read a book. I'm basically, that is me, that is like my like avatar in like the Warner Brothers universe. If I was any character in a Warner Brothers cartoon, I would be the little chicken that just wants to read books.
I would probably be I would probably be Coyote, Wile-E Coyote, but like the talking one, because
like, super genius.
Wile-E Coyote, super genius. Oh, why do they make it so difficult? He only talks in two, and they're both Bugs Bunny cartoons,
where he
actually talks, and he talks with like a very highfalutin sort of mannerisms, and just get the shit beaten out of him over and over and over again.
Would have been played by Kelsey Grammer if it was like remade today.
Yes. It really would have. I'm pretty sure it was just Mel Blanc, because Mel Blanc was just...
pretty much did everything.
Yeah, he did everything.
Yeah.
I mean, like, you just get Mel Blanc. Like, why would you hire more people when you have Mel Blanc?
It's
a very smart financial move.
Yeah, there are legions within him.
Yeah.
We used to watch a lot of those cartoons growing up. It's funny, like, I tried to show... I was like... I'm going to show Ruby some, like, the cartoons stuff that I used to watch when I was a kid. And I realized that what I did was just... ingest a lot of violence, and then like bit of sexism, bit of racism, mostly a lot of violence was like, that was my upbringing, and it turned me into the well-rounded individual that I am.
I'm not sure either of us can be classified as well-rounded or good people.
Definitely not.
But you know, like, so Disney is a very popular in a lot of places around the world, but not so much in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Disney is known and people like Disney movies,
for sure.
But we grew up, like, laughing at Warner Brothers cartoons rather than, like, singing along to Disney.
I will say, like, because Disney shorts were funny. They were good.
Yeah.
And I really like Donald Duck, particularly because he gets really angry, and that was always funny. It's really funny to me watching him just be like really toxic and like really, really angry and like borderline abusive to his nephews. But yeah, my opinion as a kid was solidly that Warner Brothers was more funny than Disney, and like more fun, and just generally, like, if I had to choose, I would have definitely watched a Bugs Bunny or a Daffy Duck or something rather than like Mickey Mouse. Mickey Mouse in particular, incredibly boring. Like, not a funny character. He's just like an everyman who just...
He's Mario.
Yeah, exactly. He really is Mario.
He's just a Mario.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Mario is really a Mickey Mouse.
Mm-hmm.
He's just like a popular character who talks with a funny accent.
Yeah.
And that's all there is to him.
Yeah.
That's it.
Kind of generic.
He's the everyman.
The best Mickey Mouse ones are the ones where Goofy and Donald come along for the ride, and then you get some actual, like
actual antics laughs
happening. Yeah.
Yeah, Japan loves Mickey Mouse.
It's very bland.
I don't get that. Like,
he's like the unflavored Doritos of cartoon characters. You know what I mean? It's like, who wants this? Who likes this? Like,
but apparently Japanese people love him, and it's like, yeah, but Bugs Bunny is like basically like he's a god.
Yeah,
like Bugs Bunny is basically like Loki. He's like the tormentor god.
Yes.
Of. Like, he can do anything he wants. He can pull anything out from his pockets or behind his back or, you know, so long as it's funny.
Yeah.
He can do it. You know, and he cross-dresses. He will do pretty much anything just to torment people.
Yeah. I mean, I showed Ruby Bugs Bunny and she thought it was really, really funny. Like, I enjoy showing her stuff like that because I know she's got, like, she loves slapstick comedy.
Mm.
Like, I watched Home Alone with her last Christmas and she just... cacked herself laughing.
She
loved it. Like, the first half of the movie, she was like, this is pretty cool. Like, this is fun. She enjoyed, like, the antics and the idea of, like, a kid being alone and getting up to mischief and stuff. But the last half of the movie, she was, like, crying. She was, like, cry laughing. She was like, my tummy hurts from laughing so much. And I was like, yes! Yes, child. Next year, Home Alone 2. So...
It's not a bad movie.
Yeah.
The original Home Alone. Home Alone 2 is basically just the same fucking movie. It's just a blow-for-blow
thing, yeah. I mean, that's kind of what I liked about it, in a way. Is, like, I wanted more Home Alone, and I got literally... that, like, almost scene for scene in some parts of the movie. Yeah. Like,
it's the same wacky antics, but this time in New York, in the big city.
Yeah, I like that. I mean, sometimes you want the sequel to be different, and I think after a couple of movies, you definitely want the sequels to start to get different.
Hmm.
But there is also, like, there is room for more of the same, but with, like, the dial turned up to 11 in video games as well as, like, you know, like movies and stuff like that. Like, sometimes I get disappointed when they change a game too much with the sequel, and I'm like, oh man, like, you kind of fucked it up here.
Yeah, you're kind of going Legend of Zelda 1 versus Legend of Zelda 2 Link's Adventure, and it's like, I just kind of wanted a better, like, another game of that with different dungeons.
Yeah.
And so we get a 2D action adventure platformer.
It's like, I get they were trying to mix it up, and like a lot of sequels back in the 80s were kind of, they would deliberately make it a bit different.
Well, because, you know, they did everything the first time.
Yeah, they kind of thought, we've done everything we wanted to do here, let's try something else. But, yeah, it's funny how, they kind of... They learned over time to, like, just kind of do the same thing again, but better with games. Like, these days, when you get a sequel to a game, it's very rarely radically different, you know? Like, Call of Duty 3 isn't going to be that different from Call of Duty 2 or whatever, like...
Same formula, yeah.
It's not going to be like, okay, now it's a side-scroller or something like that. Like, it's not... They're not going to do that to you. But back in the day, that was, like, very common, you know? Like...
Oh, yeah. Like, I've actually... You know, someone made an artificial Doom 2D platformer. And I have that. Like, I don't think it's available anymore. I'm pretty sure. But, yeah, it is Doom as a 2D platformer. It's actually, like, really fun.
Cool.
We should play it someday.
Oh, man, have you seen the roguelike Doom? It's basically, like...
Oh, I kind of...
It's, like, a top-down, like... Like literally, like, Rogue, like the old 80s, like, PC games.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like, but it's Doom, and you sort of go around and you pick up weapons, and it's got the sounds and, like, things like that.
No, that's cool. Like, yeah. If someone told me it was a top-down Doom, my brain goes to Smash TV.
No, this is more, like, turn-based, like Moriah
Rogue. Just like Rogue. Yeah,
exactly.
Jeez. I would play that. But I'd also play, like, a Smash TV version of Doom as well. That would be cool.
That actually, man, Smash TV is a pretty good game. Hey?
Oh, yeah.
Sorry to, like, just
no.
Put the brakes on this podcast.
No,
I just thought about
it's a good game. Smash TV I have that on NES.
Yeah.
You and I played that, I want to say, in the arcade when they had the
arcade version's really good. It's
not the first twin stick shooter.
Mm.
The first twin stick shooter would probably be Robotron.
Yeah, okay.
Or at least the first successful version of that, Atari's Was it Atari? I think it was Atari.
Mm-hmm.
Robotron. And that is a brilliant fucking game.
Mm.
And Smash TV is basically an evolution of that. And, you know, it's got the guy from RoboCop in there. It's I'd buy that for a dollar.
Yeah. I'm not sure that's a cultural reference that I just don't fully understand. Maybe if I was American, I'd be like, oh, it's Blah Blah Man or something, but I just know it from RoboCop.
Yeah, that's what I thought it was from. It could be where's the beef situation that we just don't get as Australians.
I didn't get the whole here's Johnny thing until a long time after. The first time I encountered that was in that techno song where they'd sample it. And it's here's Johnny, and I was like, okay, that's just a cool thing from a techno song. And then I was like, oh, it's from The Shining. Okay, now it makes sense, you know.
The first time I heard that was Short Circuit 2.
Right.
When he's beating up the bad guys after he was he goes punk after he's very badly beaten.
Wait, no, here's Johnny is from Saturday. No, that's, I got it wrong. It's from David Letterman. No, Johnny Carson. It's from Johnny Carson. And the Tonight Show thing. And
then it was in The Shining.
Late Night Show, whatever it was. Yeah. And they'd be like, here's Johnny. And then they... Yes. Okay, I got it even worse. Not from The Shining. The Shining was referencing that.
And then The Simpsons did it again when he goes, it's 60 minutes.
That's right. Yeah. See, this is the problem being Australian and consuming a lot of American media.
But not all American media.
And not understanding a lot of references and stuff and just getting it really badly wrong.
So the first time I saw that was Johnny Five going, here's Johnny, and I went, I know that reference from somewhere, but it really works here because his name is Johnny.
Yeah, it's just seems perfect. Yeah. Yeah. My brother should use that more often. He should actually say, here's Johnny. I'm sure people would love
with an axe. Needs to be holding an axe.
People would love it. It would be a real crowd pleaser.
You'd get through a lot more meetings very quickly
I should bring an axe to work. Write this down. Bring axe.
Yeah, okay. Hey Siri. I know the...
Siri, set a reminder. Bring an axe to work on Tuesday.
Okay, I added it. Let me know if you'd like to add a time or location.
No, you can say fine.
Something set it for when I leave here.
Yeah, I should probably bring an axe from your place, actually.
I do have an axe. Actually, awesome. Yes, I do have an axe. Great.
Fantastic.
Of course, because I'm me. I have an axe. Of course I do.
It also goes swimmingly. It did say bring an axe. Okay. Not an axe.
See, I'll bring an axe. I know where you work.
Yeah.
It's a fairly legal place where you work. Legal as in law firmish sort of government agency type of place.
Law happens.
It's law adjacent.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot of law that happens. They're bringing an axe to work.
That's a great.
Whilst incredibly amusing. I'm not sure how, it could be career limiting.
Yeah. I think that'd be great. All those great movie references. I'll hack down the door to a reading room and go, here's Johnny. Everyone will laugh. And then,
you'll get promoted.
That'll also threaten someone like Uncle Buck did in that one scene. Where I'll be like, hey, I'm going to cut your balls off with this axe.
Okay. We were having a nice podcast. We were chatting away very freely. It was very nice. And then you had to bring up Uncle Buck.
Uncle Buck is a classic, a family classic. I will not here stand by and let you besmirch Uncle Buck. It's great. John Candy, one of our favorite, one of the best comedy actors of all time, I think we can all agree, is
John Candy.
He's like a no good brother. He's like the family member, the black sheep of the family.
No, that's literally what Uncle Buck was about.
Yeah.
That's literally the plot of Uncle Buck is we have no one else and we have to go to this deadbeat guy.
Yeah, we have to get this guy to look after our kids for a week or two while we go and do something. I don't remember what they were doing. They had to go.
The one about the dead babysitter, what is that movie called? It's sorry, Mom, I killed the babysitter or the babysitter's dead or something like that. That's a more responsible movie than Uncle Buck was.
He cooks an enormous... Remember, he cooks an enormous breakfast for them all. A stupidly large breakfast.
Mm.
Because the joke is that he's fat. That's the funny joke. And then...
Man, writing movies in the 80s was so easy.
And then he threatens teenagers at the girls' school with an axe. Implying that he'll cut their dicks and balls off with it. If they try to touch the girl. So that's fun. Role model that I like to try and emulate in my life is Uncle Buck. I tried to bring Uncle Buck energy to my parenting style.
We both have daughters, so yeah, that's going to come up at some stage.
I also remember his car backfiring a lot. It was one of the things. Like, he'd pull up to school to drop the kids off and his car would backfire a lot. And all the kids would be like, oh, that's lame. Whatever kids say. Yeah. That's not a cool thing. And the kids would be mortified that Uncle Buck had dropped them off out the front.
Yeah, it was a station wagon. It was like a blue station wagon or something.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I remember seeing Uncle Buck for the first time in the 90s, not the 80s.
Fucking Uncle Buck, man. God damn, yes. I want to watch Uncle Buck again.
So early on in movies, like comedies, they have what's called a scene setter.
Mm-hmm.
A scene setter is like, it lets you know what the tone of the movie is.
Yeah.
Pretty early on. And Uncle Buck's scene setter was when he gets the call about, oh my God, we need to get someone in to watch the kids. We're going to call Uncle Buck on, but he's a deadbeat and he's like a weirdo. Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah, but we've got to get him. And they call him up or whatever it is. And the joke is that he's got a clapper.
Mm-hmm.
And a clapper is like one of those ones where you... Yeah, you clap your hands and the lights come on.
Yeah.
And he claps his hand twice and all of the lights in Manhattan just go off because it's so loud.
Yeah.
And then you kind of go, oh, that's the kind of movie this is.
Yeah.
That is a scene setter. And I remember seeing that going, what am I doing with my life? What am I sitting here on a Friday night watching Uncle Buck?
Because you have a great taste and you like classic comedy. Like Uncle Buck. I watched that movie a lot. I watched that movie way too much.
I mean, it was a Channel 10 movie, right?
Yeah. That was one of the staples.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, we don't have any other content, so they press a big red button that just says Uncle fucking Buck. And then they just press it, and it's either that or Bird on a Wire.
Bird on a Wire!
Bird on a Wire comes
on. I've never actually seen that movie. I somehow resisted watching it. Goldie Hawn, Mel Gibson, maybe?
It was Mel Gibson, yeah.
Yeah.
They always showed the thing of like when her skirt blew up.
Yeah.
And he goes, oh, you're wearing panties now. It's like...
Jesus Christ.
And and it was always the same thing every time. And obviously, like, Channel 10 was very poor.
Mm-hmm.
It was like the least of the commercial channels, but they showed The Simpsons.
Yeah.
But every time they didn't have content, it was like... fucking like Bird on a Wire or Uncle Buck.
Pull the Uncle Buck lever. Just smash the glass, pull the Uncle Buck lever. Yeah. Another one that was on a lot was Romancing the Stone. I remember seeing that a lot on TV. It was Romancing the Stone.
I don't like Romancing the Stone is an interesting sort of.
That was like not in the same. I would say that's like a little bit higher quality production than
Romancing the Stone is interesting. It's an okay movie. It's fine. But it saved Robert Zemeckis' career.
Right.
So he was shopping around Back to the Future since the early 80s and no one was going to buy it except Steven Spielberg, who went, I'll totally do this for you guys. It's a really awesome idea. But they'd already had a couple of flops with Steven Spielberg, and they went, we don't want to damage your reputation because you're so nice to us.
Yeah.
And then he did Romancing the Stone, and then all of the studios came back and said, we want Back to the Future now. Mm. And they went, we're actually going to go back to Steven Spielberg, who believed in us in the first place. Like, they shopped it around to Disney, and Disney said, oh, this is interesting. We don't like the whole mother-son incest idea you've got going here, which was an interesting angle to kind of focus on.
Yeah.
Which is like a joke in the movie, but it's like, it's Disney saw that and we just went, oh no, we can't have anything to do with this joke here.
It was great. Like, as much as that makes me uncomfortable to this day, it's still like such an iconic thing. Like, imagine if they didn't have that in the movie. Yeah. Like, it's kind of... I hate to be sitting here arguing for incest. I hate to be sort of... I hate to be like here as like the advocate for incesty scenes in movies.
This is what Game Life Balance Australia has come to.
Yeah. Game Life Balance, more like Game of Thrones, am I right? High five. because incest. Anyway, my point being that I think that there's something about those scenes that are so awkward, but also so like baked into like what makes that movie like stand out and like memorable.
Everyone is cast perfectly for that role.
Mm-hmm.
And the funny thing is that Michael J. Fox wasn't the original actor in that role.
Mm-hmm.
It was Eric Schultz.
Right.
Who was in The Monster.
He almost had a big career.
He was very, very much a method actor. Mm. And I don't know. Like, a lot of people out there who have never worked with actors before, like, all actors fucking suck as people. I'm just getting that out there. But method actors are the fucking worst.
Oh my god. Can I just
hate method actors. Everyone hates method actors.
I was reading about Daniel Day-Lewis the other day.
Yeah.
Who's like a famous method actor.
Yeah.
And like very selective with his roles. Like famously he's only done like 5 movies in the last like 15 years or something like that. Like he's very, very picky.
Yeah.
But one thing, that I read about him is that he will stay in character for literally like weeks sometimes. And imagine being around that man. Have you seen Gangs of New York? So in Gangs of New York, he plays a really despicable, villainous, like horrible person that sort of instills deep fear in people all around him. He's like incredibly racist, incredibly violent, just a horrific individual. And the whole center of the film is, how can you kill this man? How can we get rid of this person? Like, he's just an awful individual.
It's basically a snuff film. Like,
yeah, we all just egg. We just can't wait for him to die. The climax is just
the snuff.
We just can't wait for someone to kill this guy, you know? And imagine just being around that guy when he's just being like that way off camera, eating a sandwich or something, having a coffee, like on the side of the set, you know?
So I think it was Tom Wilson who plays Biff, Biff Tannen in Back to the Future.
Yeah.
Who kind of came out that he didn't like working with Eric Schultz because he was method acting and Marty is not a bad character in any of the movies, but, you know, like, he's not, like, a totally innocent, like, kind of bystander either. You know, like, he physically slaps, like, Tom Wilson in, like, certain scenes and stuff like that. And, he goes, oh, no, method acting. and, like, Tom Wilson came out and said, you know what? Nobody wants to be a method actor when it's, like, when you're, like, a good guy. Everyone just wants to be method actor when you're, like, the bad guy or hitting someone. It's like Tom Wilson was going, I'm going to fucking slap this guy back next time he does that. And he was fired the next week. Oh, like, Eric Schultz was. And he goes, never got to slap him.
Well, I'm kind of glad in a way that it didn't go in that direction.
Yeah. No, he was not the right. Like, I think they originally wanted Michael J. Fox for that role, but he was working on Family Ties at the time and his schedule was super limited.
Yeah,
and he actually, like, Michael J. Fox knew about the production and was going, oh, I'd love to be on a show like that, like a movie like that. But they managed to do this thing where he would work during the day on Family Ties and then at night on, there are a lot of night scenes in Back to the Future, and then on weekends on Back to the Future, like during the day scenes and stuff like that. So in this period in the 80s, like, Michael J. Fox is working, like, almost 24 hours a day. He was only, like, getting, like, a few hours of sleep every night and then, like, going between one production and another, which is pretty amazing.
That's wild.
Yeah.
That is crazy. Yeah, I can't even imagine what that's like. I complain when I have to go to the office. I'm like, oh, man, I have to put on clothes today. Fuck, jeez.
Better wear me good pair of Speedos.
Take my axe with me. Imagine, yeah, I'm going to turn up to work on Tuesday in my Speedos carrying a hatchet. Hey, guys. It's your friend, Rob.
Good old Robbie boy is here.
You know, I'm the office jokester, the office prankster. It's a wacky guy. Everyone's like, oh, that Rob.
I mean, literally wacky with an axe.
Watch out for Rob. Whack, he's whack. He's literally crazy. And when I say watch out, I mean it.
He's already killed 3 people. Yeah, but it's difficult to charge him because of the APS code of conduct. So
he can't get rid of me, though, yeah.
Unfortunately, we can jail him, but he's still going to work for us.
It's so hard to fire me. They just have to keep burning the chairs I sit on with my Speedos, but...
God.
He's crossing and uncrossing my legs in the Speedos.
See, the problem is that every time you mention the word Speedos, like, an image of Tony Abbott pops into my brain.
Oh, no. He has kind of tainted, a lot of things.
Yeah.
The Prime Ministership.
The entire country of Australia.
Yeah, our future. But also the Speedos. Yeah. It's a bad day for Speedos.
Tony Abbott was the ex-Prime Minister of Australia who didn't serve out a full term because the rest of the party said, this guy is fucking nuts, and got rid of him.
Happens a lot in Australia, actually. One of the many Prime Ministers that, like, people are like, nah!
Don't get me wrong, he's dedicated to a few certain ideals. One of them was, like, he was he's a life ser- like a volunteer life server, a lifesaver at his local electorate. So he wore Speedos and a cap, but this is also the guy who bit into an onion skin and all. He just kind of went, "Oh, you grow onions here, do you?"
Oh my God,
like just, with the skin. It's like "Oh, they're good onions."
Like the guy at the start of Iron Chef. Just biting into
He's he was very dedicated to what he believed in.
Yeah.
I will say that for him, but he was also insane.
Yeah, look, when you see a human being in that position of power like that biting into a raw onion, sometimes you think maybe the reptilians theory, like the conspiracy theory.
What do humans do? They eat food. Food.
Oh yes, food.
I am human.
I see you grow foodstuffs at this farming establishment. May I chomp onto it with my teethy pegs?
My human teethy pegs, I'll have you know, because I am definitely human.
Yeah. Om nom nom, he says. Om nom nom tastes like food that I need to digest to live.
We can only say this now because there's a Labour government in power.
Oh, God. Yeah, I think enough of water's passed under the bridge that we can mock Tony Abbott without losing our jobs. Is he still an MP or something like
that? No.
Oh, thank God. Okay.
I think he may have been he was in England for a while. I'm not sure if he was our,
that's what we always do with,
diplomat or something.
Failed PMs. We just make them ambassadors or some shit or the UK or something.
I don't know what he was doing over there, but, he's fucking their problem now.
Yeah. Get old Wingnut over to the UK. They can sort him out. He'd love it.
He was quite at home over there. I think they're all him and fucking Boris Johnson would have been two.
They would have
peas
paddling
in a,
it up.
Yeah, two peas in a pod. two peas in a pair of Speedos.
Oh God, him and Boris Johnson in Speedos, just on one of those pebbly, shitty beaches in the UK. Like it's just 10 degrees Celsius outside.
there's no sand in the UK. It's just very small rocks, but not that small.
Yeah, there's a reason why people came out here. I mean, beyond being forced to come
and
get
arrested and
for various crimes. Yeah. Oh, my God, Tony Abbott. Well, that is a fun... I think we've reached a natural pause in our conversation. Just sitting and contemplating Tony Abbott. Just meditating on the concept of the man.
He was a wacky individual, I suppose. He's still alive. I'm not sure how you kill Tony Abbott, actually. I don't think even Tony Abbott knows how to kill Tony Abbott.
You have to, stab him in the heart with a wooden stake or something like that.
I don't think that would kill him.
You have to decapitate him and then, burn him and then spread his ashes across the globe. But in 1,000 years, they'll all just coalesce slowly.
You probably need to do something to his Speedos.
I'm going to say, just launch his corpse into space on a trajectory where it'll just exit the solar system and just keep going.
He'll come back on Halley's Comet, in 80 years' time.
Can't get rid of me that easy!
I'm back and I'm here to run for Prime Minister again. So why aren't you wearing pants?
God,
lost him on Pluto.
I wonder what the thought was of publishing that photo. Maybe it wasn't maybe the press just turned up and snapped the photo of him.
I'm pretty sure it was staged.
Was it was he trying to go for the whole...
Oka Aussie.
I was going to say... why is this man's name escaping me? The Russian president.
Putin,
yeah, he's trying to go for a Putin-esque PR moment. Here I am riding horseback. Here I am wrestling a bear.
And to be fair to Tony Abbott, he's not a big, fat, white guy like most politicians are.
No.
He's pretty svelte
and
fit.
A bit of a dad bod, but, he's okay compared to Kim Beazley or...
compared to people who, the rest of both parties are just, old white hair. Tony Abbott's mostly bald.
He's probably one of the youngest PMs we've ever had, and that's sad to think about. But, yes.
You know what I found out last night?
Mm.
Scott Morrison, previous PM of Australia.
Yeah.
Quite unsuccessfully so.
Good old ScoMo. We loved him when he was in office. Now we're loyal to the other guys.
He was in his early 50s. He was effectively a Gen Xer.
Yeah. He's very relatable.
And now picture in your mind what he looks like.
Yeah.
Is that going to be us in 10 years? I like to think fucking no.
Oh my God. ScoMo.
Yeah,
look.
Basically powered by port.
Yeah. We need to be... So, a few years ago, we would never have done any of these things. Because we wanted to preserve our jobs.
Yeah.
So,
what happened was, during Abbott's tenure as absolute dictator of Australia, is that he enacted a law for public servants to say that they couldn't criticise the current government in any form.
Yeah. God damn it.
Yeah. And, like, we were forbidden to talk about our jobs, and we still, like, that law hasn't exactly gone away. But they're not the current government anymore, so we can actually say, yeah, he was batshit fucking crazy.
Yeah, not my favourite. I'd say among my least favourite prime ministers in living memory.
Yeah, I mean, basically it was the Chinese curse of you may live in interesting times.
Yeah, yeah.
That's not a good thing.
No, we're definitely living in interesting, quote unquote,
times. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, look. Yes, at least we don't have ScoMo or Abbott at the helm.
No, we got some potato guy in opposition.
Of course, if the Liberal Party or the Coalition does get elected next time around, I'm sure we'll have nothing but good things to say.
No, go with the Liberals.
I love it.
Oh, and don't the children like eating sand for lunch? God, I don't know. And don't the children love him? So video games.
Yeah, why don't we talk... Do you want to talk about video games and this video game podcast?
Whatever. It's games and life, and we talked about fucking random shit for 50 minutes. Sure. Like, we're going to keep this to an hour. No, we're fucking not.
We can try. Look, let's...
Okay.
Go. Quick fire round. Games. All right.
Games. I've actually got a list here of games I've been playing.
Sure.
Okay, I'll go first. Usually you go first. I'll go first this time.
No problem.
So I 100% completed Atari 50.
Okay, nice.
Which is basically like, it's a timeline of Atari in its different phases, and 100% completing doesn't mean that you've played through all the games to completion, because you can't actually complete most Atari games.
Some of them are endless, yeah.
Yeah, and there are unlockables that I haven't unlocked yet, but when you go through the timeline and you read everything and you play like every game at least once, it'll say like something percent completed.
Nice.
And I went through all the games. I had a great time. It is one of the best collections I have ever played. And it's such a, like, because I'm a bit of a video game history buff, it was so well put together. And because, like, if it was like a Nintendo history, like, they'd say, you can't publish this, you can't do this. But Atari has changed hands so many times that they can actually go back and say, yeah, the people who owned Atari at the time were a packet of dicks. And, you know, it doesn't matter. And it's like a complete history, something Nintendo would never do, especially as a Japanese conservative company.
Yeah.
And it was great. And I played some games I'd never played before. Atari's arcade history is fucking fascinating. My favorite game was this game called Quantum.
Okay.
Which is basically like a whole bunch of random dots kind of flying around the scene, and you have a joystick. It's actually, in the arcade, it's trackball. Right. And you're meant to draw a line around these moving dots, moving lines, without the line touching you. So it's a little bit like Quicks.
Right. Okay.
And then when you get rid of them, they disappear, and then like more lines come and stuff like that. It's really fun. Like, it's actually a vector-based game. Like, cool. It's a vector graphics game.
Okay.
And I really like vector graphics.
What sort of era are we talking for
that? We'd be talking early 80s, yeah, I think, right, yeah. For that. Asteroids is originally a vector-based game.
Yeah.
You need a specific CRT monitor. For vector games.
Yeah.
And so they're very, very rare now. The Vectrex is actually like a vector-based monitor.
Yeah.
And I'm really edging to kind of do some more Vectrex soon.
It's very cool looking with that glowing screen. It's just nothing quite like it. And like, people try to replicate that on modern TVs and stuff, and they can do a pretty good job, but nothing can really compare to the original. Like, seeing it in front of you with the real hardware.
It's never quite the same as like vector-based CRT monitors.
Yeah.
So I really enjoyed my time with that game. I haven't really gone back to it. I also got the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles collection as well, which I also gifted to you as a Christmas present.
I just remembered I haven't even touched that yet. I should plug that in and have a go. Yeah. I keep forgetting that I own it. I should do that. That'd be a good game to play on the couch as well, like, instead of being squirreled away in my study.
It's really good. Like, it's a really good collection. Once again, it has history to it. Chris Kohler put together a lot of that. Who's pretty famous in the retro game community. It has a lot of documents. It has like all of the NES, the Konami arcades. So like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Beat 'em Up and Turtles in Time Beat 'em Up, and like the Game Boy games as well. And they're all good games.
Yeah,
like even the original Ninja Turtles game for the NES is...
Oh, the platformer is there?
Yeah. I'm not sure whether I'd classify that as good, but it was certainly a game that's competent.
I played a lot of that game. I have nostalgia for that game, even though I recognize looking back on it that it wasn't a particularly good game.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
And it's got a rewind feature and stuff like that as well. So
that would make it a lot easier to get. Yeah. That game is hard as balls.
It is hard.
Yeah.
It's a very challenging game. So I enjoyed going through those games and looking at a lot of the stuff. But I get the feeling that it's the kind of game that I'd like to play with someone else.
Mm-hmm.
Like someone else on the couch. And you know, my wife is not the biggest Ninja Turtles fan. She doesn't hate it, but it's just not part of her nostalgia or childhood.
Mm. Maybe we should, have like a session sometime where we just play a bunch of those old games.
We should
played a lot of them already.
We have.
We're big fans of beat 'em ups and big fans of Ninja Turtles.
I think on either this show or Bit Seizure, we certainly did Turtles in Time at some stage, mm-hmm. which I have for Super Famicom. I've been playing Mario Kart 8. Keeps releasing new courses if you've paid for it, and they're really good. Like the new courses, like. There's like one kind of showcase track, which is always a new one, like, and it's set in different cities. Like there's like a ninja course in Japan, or a Sydney course in Australia, and that, or a Paris course. And I've been having a lot of fun just playing the new courses, and I think Mario Kart 8 is the best Mario Kart that they just keep adding content to.
Yeah,
and it's a lot of fun. But once again, it's kind of like it's more fun when you have more people there. Mm-hmm. Like you play through the courses once as yourself and you inevitably will end up getting first place or get frustrated because you can't get first place. But it's a lot more fun when you have more people playing with you.
I should check out those new levels because I play it a lot with Ruby. It's one of Ruby's favorite games to play is Mario Kart. And but I've resisted paying for the new levels, but it sounds like they're worth getting. So,
it is. It's definitely... it is, like, you get a lot of content for not a lot of money.
Mm.
And I really like that. Just the course is just a lot of fun.
Cool.
I have also been playing... I'm back on my bullshit. So I got the Zelda Game & Watch.
Okay.
And I've finished the original Legend of Zelda before. I've played... Link's Adventure, Legend of Zelda 2, a bit, but I've never finished it. I have completed Link's Awakening several times.
Mm-hmm.
Several, like the new version, the old version, the original version, like because there was like a Game Boy version and a Game Boy Color version.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also like the updated version on the Nintendo Switch.
Yeah.
And they kind of threw on Link's Awakening on the Game & Watch version.
Yeah, okay.
As kind of just like the original Game Boy kind of, we'll just throw this on here. And then I just started playing it again. So back on my bullshit, like, I really like that game. It's such a fun game to play.
Mm-hmm.
And I just completed the second dungeon, and I just can't stop playing it, even though I know where everything is and what's going to happen. It's like, I need to put this game down and play something else, but I just keep playing it.
The compulsion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's such a wonderful game,
though. It is great. Like, yeah, it's definitely one of the best Zelda games. Yeah.
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 Other than that, when I was over in Japan, I got a Satellaview.
Ooh.
Which is a Japanese-only add-on for the Super Famicom, which you'd need to set up a satellite dish and it would download games in the early to mid-90s.
Cue you looking for satellite dishes on Facebook Marketplace.
So, obviously, this service is defunct now, but the problem is that you need to... Like, a lot of the games were not dumped.
Mm-hmm.
So, there's a lot of Nintendo games out there that people have never played, and when I saw this in Japan, I went... Oh, I don't know what game's on there. And I felt a responsibility to buy it and make sure that whatever game was on there was already dumped.
Mm-hmm.
If there even was a game. I did get it. There was a game on there. It was Super Mahjong.
Damn it.
And women in bikinis, sure, I like those. I'm not a big Mahjong fan, but I just needed, like, I was, like, super worried that I would pass up an opportunity to find a Nintendo game that wasn't given to the community before.
Yeah.
It turns out that, there's just, like, one game on there and it's kind of shitty and very readily available anyway.
Yeah.
So, I'm glad that I don't have to dump that game now because I don't even know how. But
open up a can of worms
for you. It's an interesting thing to have. I'm thinking of selling it on to someone. But it's just like one of those interesting things that you come across in Japan, and I'm kind of glad they got to screw around with it for a while. The couple of other things that I've been playing is I got a new 2600 console recently, Atari 2600.
Yeah, nice.
I was just at a random shop, and this shop had such a good range of retro games. It's like Canberra Antiques and like or like collectible center or something like that. And it was like, they used to have a few games before. And then I went in there, and it was packed full. Wow. Obviously, this is someone's collection who's selling it. The prices are obscene. Like, they're not good. They're very much like eBay and higher prices. Right. But they did have a 2600, and the 2600 that I had is not... I couldn't for the life of me figure out what was wrong with it. I just couldn't tune into my TV. And this one was AV modded.
Oh.
So audio-visual modded, like it actually has, like, someone's modded it for pins out on the side. And I just went, I'm going to buy this just because I want a working 2600 console that I don't have to fiddle around with tuning in the television for. So I got that and started playing some 2600 games.
Nice.
One of the games I got from this place was called Sea Adventure.
Okay.
Which I'm pretty sure is an Australian-made game.
Right.
Obviously an 80s game, like probably late 80s. But it's fun.
Okay.
Like, you're like a little scuba diver who goes down and shoots like sea creatures and like rescue... Oh no, I think you're a sub. And then you rescue people and then bring them up to the surface. And it's like a point-based game, but it's pretty complex for a 2600 game.
Yeah, okay.
And then I realized, I looked online and went, because it's not an official Atari game, like it was obviously a third party.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked online and it was like, this game hasn't been dumped. So now I'm in the same place I was with the other, with the Satellaview. It's like, I don't know how to dump this game, but I need to do it for video game preservation.
Yeah.
Something. And nobody cares. Need to
know about Sea Adventure.
Nobody cares about this game. Like, nobody cares about undumped Atari games like they do with fucking
Nintendo games.
Nintendo games.
Yeah.
I just don't know how to dump it. I have no fucking idea.
Oh, my God.
So I need to send it to someone, I think.
Okay. Interesting. There you go. So you're the proud owner of a working AV modded 2600.
That's cool. And it's a, like, it's like I have a what we call a Vader 2600, which is like, it looks like the original wood grain one, but instead of wood grain, it's just black plastic on it, and that's why they call it the Vader. And I have that boxed.
Nice.
And it's really cool, but I just, for whatever reason, I just can't tune it into the television after a while. Like, it used to work, and now I don't think it does.
It's a shame.
Yeah, I should probably just sell that on. The two other things I'll talk about is, when I was over in Japan, I got a plug-and-play, a HDMI plug-and-play version of Denture De Go.
Oh, right. Okay.
Which is the train simulator game.
Yeah.
And I thought, I've got a few Denture De Go games already, but they're all on, like, PlayStation 2, not, like, actual HD, like, and this was... I got it from Nakano Broadway, and it was like only $60 or something like that. And I just went, I just scooped it up and just went, this will be interesting. And it's got my favorite train line, which is the Yamanote line in Tokyo.
Okay.
And it is fun
and
easier than the other games.
Cool.
Like, you don't just get you don't get a game over and like you get sent back to like the, you know, you have to start all over again. You get like a certain amount of lives and stuff. It seems to be a bit more user friendly and not like so hardcore train boys only sort of thing.
Yeah, right.
And yeah, my wife and I had a lot of fun, like just one afternoon, just like playing Denture to Go with the controller, plug and play. It was nice. Really good.
So like, it has the controller and the
The exact same controller as the original PS2.
Yeah, yeah.
Or PS1 version. And I'm now like playing this thinking, do I even need the other games anymore? Mm-hmm. It's like I've got this HDMI version and it's got my favorite train line and maybe I could just sell that on now. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But it was a lot of fun and I'm glad I scooped that up.
That sounds awesome. We should play that. I really enjoyed playing it the first time around.
And this is better. Yeah, like it's HD and it plays a lot better. Like it's not, when I say HD, it's not like computer realistic graphics. It's still very much... very much looks like a PS2 sort of game.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Like, and it's a lot more forgiving than the original game is.
Nice. All right. Yeah, I'm down for more Denture to Go.
So, yeah, maybe we'll play that next time and do a review. And what I will talk about lastly in terms of games I've played, I've actually played a lot of games, is something that you and I have played together, which was Worms WMD.
That's right. We had Worms Fest 2023.
We did, and we had it twice.
Our friendship group. Yeah, Worms Fest 2023, and then Worms Fest 2 Electric Boogaloo. and I'm sure there'll be a Worms Fest 3 at some point.
Sure there will be.
I think next time we're going to play something else, but we'll probably go back to Worms eventually too.
Yeah.
We've all made the investment to buy the game, so we should get our money's worth out of it. But yeah, Worms WMD is like a... it's like a modern remake of like the classic 2D Worms from our childhood.
The thing is that it doesn't look any different. Like it's not like HD graphics and super detailed. It looks exactly the same as like Worms Armageddon.
Yeah, pretty much.
Just with a few more weapons.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. The art style is like pretty much the same. It's like a little different, but it's pretty much the same. All your classic favorite weapons are there. You know, the way the game works, like it's very much Worms. Like, what was Worms Armageddon, I think, was the one that was kind of the Uber Worms?
Yeah, you know? That was, like, the because you could adjust. Like, there was Worms and Worms 2, and then there was Worms World Party.
Yes, that was a
where they all had the different accents and stuff. Like, and, like, Worms Armageddon basically combined all the best parts of all of those.
Yeah.
And you could, like, mod your weapons and, like, choose how you play the game and like had a level editor and stuff like that. And that was just, like, the definitive version of Worms for a very long time. And they did 3D Worms, which sucked. I did a Worms Advance for the Game Boy Advance, which also sucked because it had a bug in the program and would crash a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And something, there's like Worms Unlimited or something. And then like Worms WMD kind of got back to the Worms Armageddon level.
Yeah, it's kind of like we were kind of complaining. I think we realized that it wasn't actually quite as... it didn't have quite the same functionality as Worms Armageddon. Like you can't tweak as many things as you could in Armageddon. Like, I think you were saying in Armageddon, you could actually, like, tweak how much damage weapons do and things like that.
You could, yeah.
Whereas in this game, you can't do that. But it still has a huge amount of, like, customization options for your worms. And all the weapons that you loved are there. And you can tweak, you know, how many or how quickly you get access to them and things like that. And it does have that classic 2D gameplay. So, yeah. We had a lot of fun. We had about like six of us playing Worms, I think.
Yeah, it's amazing how like, you know, because it's there is a limit to how many people you can have. But like when you have a large friendship group online and you just kind of chat between like all of the worm stuff.
Yeah.
Like, you know, someone's taking their turn and it's not like you're going to stay silent. So you just kind of catch up and chat and like, you know, in the moment someone wins and you go, oh, I lost or I won. And like everyone's going, yeah. Congratulations. GG.
Yeah.
And then you immediately forget about it and go to the next game.
Yeah. And when people fuck up, like, which is always one of the best things in Worms, is when you fuck something up and kill yourself or, you know, kill your own worms. Everyone has a good laugh and, yeah, it's a great kind of like we weren't playing it on the couch or anything, but it had that kind of couch co-op casual vibe. You know, like you can just sit back; you don't have to take it too seriously. Eat some chips and drink some soft drink or whatever.
Yeah,
you know,
because it's turn based. Yeah. You're not like always on. It's not like an FPS.
Yeah,
but what it did, it had the kind of vibe of a LAN party.
Yes. Yeah. It did.
And I miss LAN parties. I loved LAN parties. In the late 90s and early 2000s, where you just bring your PC along with your mates and those with it. And you just like spend the time copying files and like, oh my God, I have access to this person's computer. What kind of porn do they like? just playing. Oh, it's all people dressed as Nazis with, oh god, oh, what am I looking at? Which was just
playing Quake and sharing porn.
Yeah, that's basically what it was. And there was a guy, like, I'm not going to name names, but in Japan, not in Japan, in Brisbane, like, there was a very, what you would call an incel sort of person, and they found some very, very wrong pornography that was Nazi related on, like, yeah, on when they were, like, file sharing and stuff like that, and they don't talk to him anymore after that, I don't think. Yeah, it was very worrying.
What you find when, when you find things you don't want to find.
Yeah, it's like, because, you know, you're in your teens or your early 20s or whatever, you're going, ah, this is going to be fun. You can root around on the computer and going, oh god, oh god. It's like, that's not right.
Oh dear. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's funny because you didn't have a term for the word, like, the term incel didn't exist back then, but you look back and go, oh, that's the kind of person that person was.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Worms Fest was great. I really enjoyed playing that again. I got a few prods in.
Nice.
I think two prods. But
yeah, the prod tallies.
Came
back.
It is.
Yeah. I kind of sucked at Worms, but I enjoyed having, like, a good laugh and like, just mucking around.
And that's the thing about Worms, is that even if you lose, it's always a good laugh.
Yeah, for sure. Many a ninja rope fail on my part. Yeah, that's good stuff. I enjoyed that a lot.
What about you? What have you been playing lately?
Oh, I don't have as much variety as you, unfortunately. Like, I'm kind of still playing a lot of Hell Let Loose, and that is kind of the game for me at the moment. Like, the one game to rule them all. I just keep playing over and over again. I keep coming back to, and even
just
when I
can't stop.
Whenever I install another game, I'm always like, I could play this new game, but I could play more Hell Let Loose. I could just do that instead. You know, I've weirdly kind of got addicted to it. But I reached, like, level 100 recently, like, which is, like, I think, like, a bit of a, like, a moment. You know, like, the old
bit of a milestone.
The old players, like, the veterans are level 100 plus, you know? And, like, when you see someone on your team with level 100 or higher, you're like, this guy knows how to play this game. Like, I'm in good hands with this guy, you know? But when they're sort of below that number, it's like, you're still wondering, like, are they going to be a dickhead? Are they going to know what to do? Are they just going to be mucking around? Are they not going to have a microphone? Just all these things that can sort of bug you when you're playing that game. But I probably will keep playing that game for the foreseeable future. I can't see myself getting bored with it. I will say it's kind of stopped. I've seen through the looking glass a little bit. I understand the meta of the game a lot more than I did when I first started playing it. And I can see it now less as, like, a simulation of being in war and more as, like, a video game now, you know? Like, so there's this sort of shift in my thinking about it where, like, I'm no longer scared of, like, the artillery or the bombing runs and things like that, which have this really terrific loud sound and, like, spectacular graphics when it happens. And, you know, it's quite scary when you start playing the game. You're like, oh my god, like, this feels like I'm really in Saving Private Ryan over here, you know? And that's kind of worn off a little bit on me. And, like, I'm just treating it like a video game now and, like, yeah, less immersed, I guess I would probably say is how I'd put it. Yeah, less immersed in it and less, like, edge of my seat.
Yeah.
And more, like, just kind of, like, you're seeing it for the game that it is and just trying to win matches and, like, yeah.
It's a game now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. But having said that, it's still, like, lots of fun. And there's still something really satisfying about shooting someone in the head with a rifle from, like, 300 meters, and you can hear, there's a really satisfying noise in the game when you shoot someone in the head because they're wearing a helmet. It makes, you can hear this, like, metallic, like, clang, and their helmet will fly off their head, and, like, and you just shot them right through the brains, you know? And, like, when you hear that sound, when you're shooting it, like, a little couple of pixels across a field because you can't see them very well, and you hear that clang, it's just like, fuck yeah, man, this is a great game. I just live to hear that noise, you know? So yeah, still enjoying that a lot and just playing all the different classes. I still haven't... One thing I haven't done in that game yet, which I suppose is the next sort of, like, final frontier for me, is playing as the commander. Like, volunteering to be the commander.
The actual leader of the team.
Of the whole 50 players. Because you get a lot of shit if you do a bad job and everyone blames you.
Do you think you could do it? Like, do you think you could do a good job?
I think I need to watch a few more videos and, like, familiarize myself with how it works, you know? because there's people are very merciless. Like, if you don't do a good job, they're like, fuck. They'll even, like, try and kick you. Like, they'll start, like, a vote and say, like, you know, because you can kick people if they're abusive in the game.
Oh, wow, okay.
So, people, if they don't like the commander, they'll start a vote. They'll, like, kick you off. And if they get 30 votes, you get kicked out of the game. So, I'm like, jeez. Like, it's stressful enough in that game driving the truck. Like, when you start off the match, there's, like, trucks at, like, various spawn points at the edge of the map. And you hop in, like, the transport truck and drive out. You can walk if you want, but that's, like, you're not going to get there for a while. So you sort of jostle for position and hop into the truck. But whoever drives the truck, if you do one thing wrong, like you crash into a tree by accident or go off the road or something like that, everyone in voice chat is just like, oh, my God, what a fucking dickhead. Oh, Jesus Christ, who the fuck is this? Fucking this guy can't drive for shit.
Do you play with Australians?
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
are
yeah.
they all Australians?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah, so they're extremely, like,
the
vocal.
The worst of the backseat drivers.
Who the fuck is Quant fucking all? It's kind of funny because, like, everyone makes... We all kind of know. Everyone knows that everyone makes mistakes, but we all just like to...
Carry on.
One of the funny little weird things in that game is, like, the banter that occurs in the truck as you drive towards the start of the game, because you got like about a minute or two where nothing's really happening and you're just sitting in a truck and there's like a bunch of your like little character models around and everyone just chats in like local chat. It's just saying dumb things, like people will like play music on through their like microphone or like just like role play a little bit, and like if you're on the German side you'd be like, yeah, sausages, ah, beer, stuff like that, or
that was my guten,
yeah. Yeah. Or like just, yeah, just talk about dumb shit. So anyway, enjoying the game. I don't have like too many crazy stories or anything. It just continues to be fun. They're releasing new maps and stuff every so often, new weapons. So it continues to be fresh, and I'll keep playing that for a while longer.
Is that a free game or
no? It's a you pay to get in, but then you get all the access to all the
okay.
Because it's kind of like a constant work in progress. Like, it's not early access, but they just keep releasing new content and everyone gets access to it, you know.
That's cool.
The one thing I think they are selling cosmetics at this point, but
I mean, you'd need some sort of additional income.
Yeah, but it's pretty small. It's like, do you want the cool coat? But it's never to the point where you look ridiculous. Like, you can't get like a big purple cape or like deer antlers.
There goes my interest.
Yeah, you still look like a World War II guy when you buy the you know.
You can't dress as a clown.
No, yeah, yeah. It's not like Fortnite or something like that. You can't get like the crazy outfits or anything like that. But yeah, that's still a lot of fun. In terms of other games I've been playing, I'm trying to rack my brains. There's not too many. I bought the Shadowrun RPG that came out in like 2015. I didn't get like the first one. I think it's called Dragonfall, which is like the sequel to that first one. Because people said it's better. I've read a bunch of reviews and they're like, look, that first game has problems. This is the one that was funded through Kickstarter. And it's like a spiritual successor remake sort of thing of the Super Nintendo RPG.
Yeah, that was very popular. I'm not sure popular is right. It had cult following.
Yeah,
strong cult following.
Yeah, Shadowrun is this tabletop role-playing game set in the... It's like a cyberpunk dystopian future. But then someone was like, what if we did cyberpunk, but with like elves and dwarves and magic and shit like that? That's like Dungeons and Dragons meets cyberpunk, which like I'm self-aware to know that that's really dumb. Like it's a really stupid thing.
That's such a 90s concept though.
Right? Yeah, yeah. But like, you know, the setting itself is like, you know, meh, how you going? But there's something about like, I like a good cyberpunky thing, and I can overlook the fact that it's really silly with the elves and dwarves and stuff. But I haven't been playing much of it. I played like a bit of it, did a few shadow runs, as they call it, like it's basically quests. But I just couldn't really get into it. I think there's something a little too simple, or like it plays kind of like it's like a tactical role playing game where you move your guys around the map, around the screen, and
like real time or
no, like turn based,
okay.
Kind of like that. What was that game that was like you're fighting extraterrestrials and you're...
SOCOM?
SOCOM, yeah. Or whatever. Not SOCOM. XCOM.
XCOM.
Yeah, it's like that. It's like that. But I actually liked XCOM more. I don't know. This isn't giving me the same jollies that XCOM did. So I'm kind of falling off that, which I'm glad. I mean, I bought it on sale on Steam. So I'm like, yeah, no harm, no foul.
Yeah.
The other game I bought on sale on Steam just the other day was another RPG that I'm looking for an RPG to play, you know, because I have this feeling I want to play an RPG.
You want a Rob game, don't you?
Yeah, I want to play just a classic JRPG-ish thing, just to kind of like...
Persona. Persona 4. Itch.
Yeah, maybe I'll end up playing Persona.
You should. I would love to hear you play Persona 4 and get weekly updates on that, because that would just be the most hilarious thing ever.
Yeah, yeah. Look, I mean, I've already witnessed a lot of the game from watching the Giant Bomb
play. Yeah, me too.
But yeah, maybe I'll pick that up at some point. I know that there's a remake of Suikoden 2 as well coming out later this year, so I'm looking forward to that. That's kind of the one I'm really looking forward to playing. But the other day I picked up the South Park role-playing game, South Park The Stick of Truth.
Ah, the first good South Park game.
Yeah, it actually is kind of good, yeah. Like, I knew it was an RPG, and I'd seen... Again, I think I watched a Giant Bomb, like, quick look many, many years ago, and I thought, hey, this is actually, like, surprisingly not shit.
That's because it has the original creators... doing a lot of the legwork in that game.
Like, I think they were very deeply involved in the creative work, and, like, you know, of course they did all the voices and everything, but I think they were also involved in like designing the game to some extent as well. I'm not sure how much, but to some extent. But yeah, it's a competent role-playing game. Like, it's good, I would say. Like, turn-based RPG that kind of is a satire, like a spoof of turn-based RPGs, like,
but while actually being one,
and whilst, yeah, and with all the South Park tropes, like the map of the game is like the town in South Park, and you go from door to door, and instead of being like a fantasy world, it's the kids in South Park are just are playing like Lord of the Rings. They're basically all pretending to play Lord of the Rings, you know, and the Cartman is kind of like a Gandalf kind of figure, and he bosses all the other kids around as Cartman does,
yeah,
and you join his like faction to fight against the Drow Elves, which are, like, the other, like, the baddies, the kids in the game. And you're the new kid in town. And so, at the start of the game, you create, like, a South Park character. Like, I got to pick how my little South Park dude looks.
I think,
you know?
I remember, when you pick it, it's white is easy, and, like, you can turn his skin tone to, like... Like, he can become black, and that's, like, hard level, when you're a black kid.
I think, yeah, you can pick to be black, and, like, the game is, like, just the typical, like, South Park bullshit of, like... when you're selecting your character, I made my character look like me when I was a kid. Like, little rosy-cheeked, blonde-haired guy, you know?
Butters, basically.
Basically, yeah, it's funny, because the first character you meet is Butters. And I'm like, this is perfect, because I literally was Butters when I was a kid.
As someone who knew as a kid, yes.
But yeah, this the typical South Park, like, you know, like really pushing the boundaries of like edgy humor. Like, when you select your character, you can choose to be a fighter, a wizard, a thief, or a Jew. And I was scrolling through, clicking on them to see what it says. And when you click on, I clicked on thief, and it was like, oh, we don't see many white thieves these days. Okay. I'm like, dude, that's fucked up. You know, like, so like, I have a love-hate relationship with South Park because, like, it pushes my buttons and, like,
that's what it's meant to do. Like, yeah, that's the whole point.
Yeah, yeah. It's it's definitely edgy humor. Like, you know, you triggered dude kind of, you know, shit. But I also, you know, it is funny. So, like, I kind of, yeah, I wouldn't say I hate South Park. I wouldn't say I love it either. I'm kind of like, I take it for what it is.
It's edgy with a point.
Yeah. Like, Sometimes some of the satire falls flat. Some of the times they attack things that I think they shouldn't have done that.
Yeah.
Other times I'm like, lol, they're making fun of something that I think is stupid, so I'm going
to
enjoy
it. South Park's interesting because they do evolve over time. Like, they used to make fun of, the deputy president, what's his name? Al Gore.
Al Gore, yeah.
And, like, basically, like, oh, my God, like, you know, he's a scaremonger dickhead sort of thing. And then they came back later and said, you know what? Al Gore was right.
Yeah.
But he's still a dickhead.
Yeah.
We still don't like this guy, but he was right.
That was one of the funny things. Yeah, the kids apologized to him for being like, we thought you were stupid for being afraid of Man-Bear Pig, but now we realize that Man-Bear Pig's real. And, so that was, like, a moment of humility, like...
He's like, we get stuff wrong and we evolve and stuff like that. And that's always good to see, especially in satirists.
So, yeah, like, I will say this, like, for as much as I have kind of like a love-hate relationship with South Park, I'm really enjoying the game. Like, just little things make me happy. Like, even the moment I started playing it, I was like, this is great. Because it's like a, what do you call it? Like a pseudo 3D, 2.5D, like, it's all like a fighting game where you've got, no, a beat-em-up, where you've got like a foreground and a background and you can move not just left and right, but also like back
move
and
on
forward.
The z-axis,
and it looks exactly like a South Park episode, the way you walk around and move around in the world, you know, which just like delighted me. And it's still kind of funny just to watch my little South Park kid roam around with Butters in tow, just talking to people and not going into kids' houses and like meeting the different characters in the South Park world. So yeah, I'm going to keep playing that.
Cool.
It seems like it's got some weird depth to it too. Like,
yeah, no, I've heard a lot of good things about that and its sequel, Fractured Butthole.
So yeah, I'm going to keep playing that and we'll see if I actually manage to stick with it. Like, I have a tendency to fall off games apart from Hell Let Loose for some reason, but that's kind of it, AC. I haven't been playing a lot of other games.
And that's not a bad thing, you know? Like,
we're busy, we have busy lives.
We are actually very busy people. Mm-hmm. It's kind of sad.
Yeah.
I suppose the other thing I can say about my life is that my dad decided to sell his 1918 Model T Ford. Oh, actually, might be 1917. But in any case, like disparaging years between Model T Fords is basically useless because they're very stock and standard.
Mm-hmm,
like, that's the whole point of those things. There are very minor upgrades over the years.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, I'd never had a go in it.
Right.
And I wasn't allowed to drive it.
Mm-hmm.
For good reason. It doesn't drive like a normal car does. It's basically like operating the TARDIS. It's like there's 6 consoles and you've got to like pull a whole bunch of levers and buttons and like pump things and like it's very ridiculous when watching someone drive one of these fucking things.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad sold it the next day, which is why I wanted to have a go in it. But my brother knew how to drive it, and so he took me around Tauranong. And this involved going through like the main street or near the Hyperdome.
Yeah, right.
Like going down that, and like it had a Claxton horn, so it goes like ring, ring. And the thing about a Model T Ford is that these things, like, of course, they don't have seat belts.
Yeah.
They're quite high off the ground just because of the way they're modeled.
Mm-hmm.
But the seats are quite high up as well. So the way the fuel tank works is there's no fuel pump. It's gravity fed.
Right.
So in other words, the fuel tank is under the seat. So the seat has to be higher than a normal seat would be so it can, the gravity will put the fuel into the engine.
Oh, weird.
So we were quite high off the ground, but like the doors only came up to my waist.
Okay.
So, and there's no seat belts. So you need to grab some the fuck on. My brother, who was like driving the car, had his hands on the steering wheel, so he was fucking safe. And of course, my brother being my brother, it was like, hey, let's see how fast we can get this fucking thing up. So we're in a Model T on Drakeford Drive in Canberra.
No, that's a bad idea. The highway.
Which is one of the main, it is the main concourse in the Tuggeranong area.
Oh,
and we got this thing up to, I want to say it was 38 mile an hour.
38 miles an hour?
Miles an hour. So that's basically
that's
like
pretty fast.
60. Like basically 60 with no seatbelt and half of your body kind of like over the edge of the car.
Oh my God.
And then Chris, my brother, broke the speedometer. Like the speedometer is basically like a little dial, but not in the way you think it is. Like it is horizontal rather than vertical.
Okay.
Like, so it just kind of like, it's like a little spinning disc, which will just kind of say where you're up to.
Right.
After a while, just kept saying we were going 15 mile an hour, even when we stopped, and Chris went, I think I broke the speedometer. Anyway, and my dad's just like, I have to sell this fucking thing in 2 days' time. What have you done?
Oh my God. And I suppose you have to, like, there's probably like 6 speedometers in Australia or something that you can like get.
Dad can fix it.
Yeah.
Chris could fix it as well.
That's so funny.
But it was an absolute treat riding in a 1918 or 1917 Model T Ford. Of course, it was black.
More old school than a Model T.
No, you really can't. Except for my dad's new car.
Mm-hmm.
So the Model T was a stopgap, basically. It's like my dad was like, oh, I guess I'll buy the Model T, but I really want an older veteran. So veteran cars are basically the beginning of automobiles up until about 1920, 1922, it's a bit iffy.
Yeah.
And then they become vintage cars up until about 38. And then they become classic cars.
Classic cars, yeah.
So my dad wanted a veteran, and he just purchased I'm pretty sure it was a 1912 1911 or 1910, and once again, it doesn't really matter. Brush.
A brush.
A brush. A runabout. So basically, it's a one. It's like a one-stroke four-cylinder engine.
Okay.
Basically, it's a lawnmower. Probably less power than a lawnmower. And it is, like, it's fascinating. Like, you know, you need to crank start it and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. What fuel do these cars take?
It is regular unleaded gasoline.
You can use unleaded.
Work.
Yeah, right. You just fill it up. Imagine pulling up at the servo with your little Model T and...
So, yeah, basically, this is...
oh, wow.
Yeah, Rob is looking at it right now, which is basically a two-door. There's no doors.
It looks like a couch with wheels.
Yeah, basically.
It looks like a little love seat.
The car is very interesting because it was actually specifically imported to Australia from the factory. So, Brush is a French company.
Okay.
Or was a French company.
Right.
And, like...
Before Australia they just made brushes.
Probably, yeah. I mean, everyone was fucking... It was like the early version of video games, is that everyone just kind of got in.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, it's a very interesting sort of car, and it is basically like a couch on wheels with a lawnmower engine.
That's amazing.
And, like, Dad was very happy to get his hands on this.
I kind of like the charm of it. Like, I can... While I don't want to get into vintage cars or veteran cars or whatever, I can see why someone would. Like, if I was going to become a car nerd, you can bet that's the kind of car nerd that I would be.
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
you'd be a historical car nerd.
Yeah, you can see it, like, in my freaking genetics. It's like, ooh, old things that are that no one understands.
Has a particular character to
it. Yeah, I can lecture people about the history of them and stuff. Yeah,
and that's what Dad's going to do. Like, Dad is going to, like, write the history down because it's very rare that these would come directly from the factory to Australia. They would usually go to the US and then they get imported.
Yeah.
And back then, like, there was no left or right side of the road because there weren't enough fucking cars. So this is, like, actually a left-hand drive.
Yeah, right.
We didn't become right-hand drive until much later on, and that's because we did so because of the British.
Right.
So it's a very interesting car, and, like, Dad's kind of very... He doesn't have it yet. He needs to get it up to where he's living in Coffs Harbour. But he'll probably have it in Canberra. But it is the simplest of, like... Like, the early cars are, like, you'd think are very simple.
Mm.
And they are. But the controls are incredibly complex.
They haven't, like, what's the word? Made them user-friendly.
There was no standardization.
Yeah, yeah.
And you wanted to make sure you could do a number of things with the car. And this car was just, like it was manufactured to a certain degree, but not to any specification. It was like the people who engineered this thing went, yes, this is it. This is what we're going to do. This is the best car ever. And it was 19 fucking 10.
Yeah.
So it's like, that, there was no standard.
Yeah.
It's like, I reckon we got this nailed, and it's like...
That's the pinnacle.
Yeah, this is like, basically, there's like a handbrake, and there's like three pedals, and the choke is actually on the steering column, and like the steering wheel doesn't behave like you think it would.
Yeah. I have enough trouble thinking about like Beetles, where like the gear shift is on the steering column. Like, that confuses me enough that I'm like, I don't want to drive a Beetle, that's weird.
Yeah.
Let alone like... an older car than that. Yeah.
So that'll be an interesting jaunt when Dad gets that to Canberra, I suppose.
Fascinating. All right.
Yeah, so that's kind of my life at the moment. Like, I'm very glad I got to drive in a Model T Ford.
Yeah.
What we call a Tin Lizzy. That's what they used to call Model T Fords.
Very still cool. Doing, so. All right.
I'm very happy with that. I suppose we're now over an hour and a half, and you said we're only going to record for an hour. So do you have any final thoughts?
Final parting thoughts. Tony Abbott should be launched into space. Let's just recap our main
takeaway. Imagine aliens finding him frozen after like 3,000 years and going, well, this is the representative of humanity?
This is who they sent?
Why is he wearing clothes? I thought they had clothes.
What are these strange appendages on his head? I think they're some kind of radar dishes.
Why is he eating an onion? A whole onion.
Hello, good boys. You got any onions? That's what he would say.
Yeah, they'd just launch him back into space again, like we did.
Send him back. Return to sender. yes. No, I don't have much to add, AC, but it's been really fun catching up with you and Yeah, hearing about your video game adventure. Seems like you've been a bit more active with gaming than me recently.
You know what? It's funny because I don't think I am.
Yeah.
But, like, I don't play as many games as you do, but I do certainly play a variety.
Yeah, I've been, like, I put a lot of hours into Hell Let Loose this last few months, but not much else, so.
Fair enough.
Yeah. I wonder what the hour count is on my Steam. I should have a look at that. Oh, well.
All right. With that, you can find us at, we're actually shutting down gamelifebalance.com.au.
Yeah, we're in the process of moving over to Anchor FM, but I've had a few technical issues with that.
Yeah. So just look for our podcast on any normal podcast apps.
Yeah.
I think you'll be able to find us. Nobody really visited our website.
No.
Which is very sad.
Well, a bunch of scammers did, and they posted a bunch of weird scammy comments. I
got that as well.
That I didn't approve.
Yeah, for Game Life. For Bit Seizure, I got that because I used to host the website for that one as well. But you know, we'll keep doing this. Our commitment to you is 4 times a year,
Well, quarterly. It's quarterly, your quarterly video games and life podcast.
Yeah, I think we're both very busy people. We have a lot going on in our lives.
Yeah, we do.
And that's okay. That's not a bad thing. We're not going to shut down, but just be patient, I suppose. And you know, you'll get a quarter of a year of our lives in one podcast. Yeah. So I think that's value for money. And you pay $0. So
yeah, stop complaining, you fucking bitches.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, you don't pay us money. Like, why should we keep entertaining you for free?
Exactly.
We do anyway, but...
Because we love you, even though you hurt us.
If we set up a Patreon, do you think anyone would actually give us money?
L-chan. Maybe one person. It would be L-chan.
Maybe.
He'd be on the highest tier as well. I'm going to give you
an irony of 50 cents. An ironic 50 cents.
I like to think he would be on the highest tier because he'd just be like out of pity for us. He would just be like,
yeah, probably.
And then we'd have to do things for him. We have to do special things for him because he's on the highest tier, you know, join the live recording or some bullshit like that.
Well, he's been a guest on this.
He actually has witnessed the magic.
I've recorded with him in Japan before. Oh god. Okay, that's Game Life Balance Australia. You can find us in all the usual podcast apps. I forget how we used to end this without the copy.
Listen to us. Wuzzle Wazzle.
Or we'll beat your brains out.
Toodle Pip.
Speedos.